Thanks so much, Krista. I know we gave you some funky names in the first passage and a nice little rabbit trail to follow through John 9 in the second, but thank you so much for getting us through there and able to encounter some of God's words. So last weekend, we marked kind of a special rite of passage in my household. Aislinn went to her first school dance, or as I like to call them, especially in middle school, her first stand around in a dark auditorium in pods with your groups of friends, and then maybe once or twice get up and jump around a little bit. And I say that in part because seeing her get ready and get excited and have fun with her friends reminded me of that same stage of life for myself. And I remember going to my first dance in middle school. I believe it or not, am not very much of a dancer. So I also spent a lot of time hanging out with my friends talking, and you know, our compromise instead of trying to dance was, well, let's at least pick out some songs that we like, and we'll maybe go request at the DJ if we can get those. And I remember spending a lot of time talking and hemming and hawing with my friends about all of this, not really so much because we said, oh, well, there's a limited amount of time at the dance, we know a lot of other people are going to make requests, so we want to make sure we really pick something good. Right? And so we hear our favorite song that we'll get excited about. But it's because we thought people are going to see us like walk across the floor to the DJ table. They're going to know that we requested a song. And if it's a good song, then they'll think we're really cool. But if it's not the right song, then we'll get judged by our middle school friends, as we are so prone to do. Right? So we wanted to make sure we got to pick the right one, be as cool as possible. And, you know, hopefully a lot of us can relate to some version of that feeling a little bit at some stage of life, where we just know that one thing that we do, people are going to attach all sorts of other meaning and value judgments to, whether it's something that we like, something that we've experienced in our lives, maybe some characteristic that we have. And like I said earlier, sometimes we feel like if someone knows this one thing about me, it just seems like they're going to say, well, now I definitely know 10 other things about you, too. I have you completely pegged. And that can not be an easy thing to go through, right? Sometimes it can be nice. You can say, well, if I know something about someone, then that will help me feel like I can connect with them. I feel a little bit safer, like maybe they'll be my friend. But a lot of times it ends up feeling more constricting if we think someone will make assumptions about us based on a little bit of information. It feels depersonalizing, like we have to justify something about ourselves before it turns into a big deal. I'll give another quick example of that that maybe hits home a little bit more. I've had multiple conversations with people in the church about whether or not they like White Castle. And apparently there's some very strong feelings both for and against about White Castle here. And I've noticed when I have these conversations that people on either side will have some very important explanations and comments about this as they go. So someone might say, you know, the smell like really basically makes me sick. But I know that some people really like White Castle. So I'm glad that they do. But then people on the other side might say something like, you know, I could eat it every day, like almost every single meal. But I get that it's not for everybody, and I'm not mad at them for that. Like, I'm glad that they have the things that they like too, right? And I think the reason why we are naturally like going for those types of explanations when we have those feelings is because we do know how common it is as humans to end up making assumptions, even for something as simple and that feels small, like what type of restaurants that we like or we don't like. And so I think that people, when they're making those comments to me, they're trying to make sure to say, there is more to me than just the restaurant that I like or that I don't like. And also that it doesn't mean that I can't have friends or find ways to compromise and go out to eat with people who view things differently. That it might seem like something that could turn into a fight, but I know how I can like get along and we can do really well. And that's like a beautiful thing that people are thinking about that and trying to express it. You know, it should be weird that we would have to say those types of things, that we would think, if I don't give this extra explanation, people will assume all of these other things. But we can probably understand, like, why is it that we just naturally say that it feels necessary to us? There is something that we know about our human condition that we kind of plan on making those caveats that way. So I want us to think about that. And I know that some of you are probably thinking a little bit right now also that, Rob, you sort of buried the lead on this story, right? Like, we went through a bunch of verses of Scripture, but you realize, you know, it's a long story, but we skipped over the part where Jesus healed someone from being blind with dirt and spit. Like that, maybe that seems like something to have spent a little bit of time on. It's a pretty impressive miracle. And I agree, I do want us to remember that that's what happened, is that this is a blind man that was healed by Jesus, the one that we met in those very first verses from John 9. But one thing that's true is that often in this passage, you hear the story of like, Jesus spit in the dirt, rubbed it on the man's eyes, he's healed, and then you just kind of stop, because that's really impressive. But then we miss this whole super long story that John wants us to notice about how this healing creates this big conversation and debate and inquest between the man, even his parents, the Pharisees and the Jewish rulers, and all of these witnesses. And I think that there's a reason why John bothered to spend that much time telling us all of that extra part of the story of what came next that I think God can speak to us about as well. And it's a part of the story that I think is actually very appropriate for our current sermon series about God in the everyday for everyone, because it connects with an experience that we can probably all relate to in some way, and that can end up feeling like it plays a big role in even the small, regular, everyday aspects of our lives. And this same thing is true, by the way, of the passage in Job. This is at the end of the story of Job, where Job had basically everything he loved and had taken away from him. He and his friends are hanging out, like trying to make sense of it. His friends basically tell him, there must be something horrible about you. You better figure it out. Tell God, and then everything will be okay. But Job sort of stays strong and says, no, this didn't happen because something is wrong with me. I don't know what God is up to. I trust that God must be doing something that I will end up understanding, or that I can still worship God about later. I trust God. I'm not going to reject God, but I'm also not going to say that I'm a horrible person just because this happened to me. And so God is coming and affirming that this is not about the ways that we can make judgments about someone from knowing a little bit of information. This was about something else, for what it means for God to respond with us faithfully. And so we can't all relate to losing like everything in our entire lives like Job. Maybe some of us have had experiences close to that, and hopefully we can have God with us through that. Also, probably most of us cannot relate to a miraculous healing in the most direct way. We see God healing people, but it's a little bit different. But I know that we can all relate to that question that comes up in those early words of the passage in John, wondering what it's like when we anticipate people maybe asking those questions about us. Who sinned? Who's broken in this situation? You or your parents or the people around you? We can all relate to this idea that people are assuming that there's something off or broken or bad about us because of a particular characteristic we have. We can also, if we're honest, probably all relate to the temptation that there is for us to make our own judgments and assumptions and value statements about people when we know just a little bit about them. And we assume that we know everything else about what they're going through. It's worth thinking about how powerful those assumptions actually are in our lives and in the lives of the man. We might say in particular that it's amazing that Jesus restored the man's sight, that he's able to see again, and what else in his life could be opened up by such a miracle. And that's true. But look at how the assumptions about him and our inclination to do that as humans follow him around even after his sight is restored. It turns out that those assumptions and value judgments don't just stop, but instead they transform and just become something new. The Pharisees maybe don't say, oh, that blind man must be full of sin now that he's healed. But now that his identity to them is the healed man, they have all these other assumptions that they start to pile on. Things like, well, he must have been a liar before, and he wasn't really blind, and that's why we see him sighted now. So they still make an assumption. Or they make an assumption, he's demonic because the wrong person that we don't know about is the one who healed him. Or maybe even to the point at the end, it doesn't even matter what happened to him, if he can see now or not. He is still just a person who is completely full of sin that God has no interest in and no value for. The assumptions don't go away no matter what happened to the physical sight. the baggage and the damage of the assumptions and extra meanings and value judgments that the healed man and his family dealt with, again, we can probably have things come to mind that we relate to that, at least a little bit. And those need healing just as much as the man's physical sight did. And so, when we see that people can see themselves and each other in new ways, that their vision and their understanding of people can be transformed because Jesus declares something, like not only you can see, but Jesus will declare those assumptions are false and assumptions are not the way that God sees the world or interacts with people, that is its own kind of miracle that changes the lives for wholeness and thriving of all of the people in the story. So I want us to take just a moment as we continue and get in touch for yourselves. What is something that you may have experienced before where you knew that people were making an assumption about you because they knew one little bit of information? And then maybe they were prone to piling on about something that was a struggle or an insecurity. Maybe even sometimes we start to make extra assumptions about ourselves because we know or think other people will think something about us. What does that feel like? What is that experience like? On the same token, or maybe if you don't have as many of those experiences, maybe you have been like the parents in the story and you have someone in your life who you are trying to support who's having something that's difficult about them, a struggle, or they're seen as an outsider in some way. And you really want to support them, but you know that people will make a lot of assumptions about them because of just a few things that they may find out. What's it like to be a supporter of someone in that place? And then finally, even though it's really hard, let's also remember what it can be like when we are tempted to be like the Pharisees and assume things about someone. I find out one thing about you. I find out a few things about you. I know exactly who you are. I'm even going to make judgments and value statements about the type of person you are, how much God may or may not love you or accept you. That's a temptation that I think is just part of what it is to be human. We want to make those jumps. What gets us to that place? Because in this story with John, and we see it some with Job too, in each character we can probably see something where we could put ourselves in their shoes and their perspective, but then we can also see how it is that Jesus, in standing up to those assumptions, those value judgments, does something that can transform where anyone is coming from, that either they can find encouragement or they can find a new way of interacting with people that is healthier and creates more thriving. So let's look at the healed man. Even when he is first healed by Jesus, the ultimate meaning and impact are not completely settled and obvious for him. If you keep reading in John 9, he has one more encounter with Jesus where Jesus is now finally saying, this might have the fact that I healed you and that I'm interacting with you, you can learn something more about your connection with God from it than just the healing and whether or not I'm powerful. Only after he's gone through everything else does Jesus ask him, do you think this means I'm a prophet? Do you think this means I'm the Christ? Do you think this means I'm something else? And so the healing itself doesn't just do that, but he's still willing to do something difficult. The healing doesn't solve all his problems. He still has to stand up for his dignity. He still has to stand up for his worth because other people still want to dismiss those aspects of him even though something miraculous has happened. And so the fact that this man, a regular guy who'd gone through difficult experiences in life in that culture, he's willing to say, I can be rooted at least, even if I don't know all the answers yet, even if I don't know all of the things that will solve all of my problems yet, I'm going to stay rooted in the light and life that I've experienced so far. And I'm going to let that invite me into more learning, more growth, more curiosity, so that I can find healing for myself, not only in my eyes, but in my spirit and in my identity and who I am. And this gives him ultimately a truer understanding and a closer connection to God than the Pharisees and other people who think that they're pretty holy and they have God figured out. He ends up with a closer connection than they do because he's willing to keep learning and keep seeing what Jesus has for him. If we can relate to the parents, we can see how even when things start to break, that it can be very scary to associate yourself with someone who has assumptions made about them. You can wonder, will those assumptions and judgments also come onto me, even though I didn't necessarily have something directly to do with this? But we see them, even in those places of fear, learning a lesson that can be really good for us as well when we're supporting people. You notice that they decide that they're going to let their son speak for his own experience and be empowered and encouraged to be someone who can talk about what the meaning of what's happened to him is. When normally he would have been seen as powerless, worthless, his testimony doesn't really matter because he had this disability and because all these assumptions had been made about him. And they may have done it out of a place of fear, but the fact that they are willing to say, no, you need to be able to see the dignity and worth of our son. He can speak for himself no matter what assumptions that you have about him. It ultimately can bring a bond between them and help them see their son the way that God sees him. And that will create a better supporting relationship amongst all of them. And that's something we can learn more too, is even where we might be prone to make an assumption or worry about someone else, that we can find ways for them to step up for themselves as well. And that's one way that we see something more than our assumptions in them, their ability to talk about their experience. And then finally, we have to admit that we can sometimes relate to the Pharisees. They have this fear of losing control because they're faced with something that's outside of their experience. And not only that, they may have to face the fact that they have insufficient knowledge. They have insufficient power for the circumstance. And that might mean that they have to change their view of themselves and whether or not they are accountable to following God rather than making sure that they get seen as the ones who speak for God. This is something that happens to them that changes their sense of control and comfort in the situation. They have to let go of something that they thought they were in charge of because God has shaken things up and shaken their assumptions up. But we know, and we can see in the interaction that Jesus has with the man, that if they are open to seeing things that way, to letting go of those assumptions for themselves, that they will be able to see through God's eyes instead of their own. And that ultimately is better for their wholeness, for their connection with God, than all of the shaming and all of the rejecting that they had done before that helped them feel powerful. Jesus ultimately brings transformation not only to the experience of blindness, but also Jesus brings transformation to the experiences of rejection and feeling trapped that come from when we get caught up in all of those added assumptions and value judgments that can be made. Jesus brings a completely different foundational focus to this part of human experience that we can adopt for ourselves as well. When we see pain and struggle and uncertainty or difference, we're prone to wanting to explain it as being about something else that's wrong with that person. Because if we can find that out, then that helps us feel safe because we probably have less risk of experiencing it if something is wrong with that person, but we don't think that's wrong with us. Or maybe that means that we have an excuse to not get involved in supporting someone who's going through something difficult because it's really just on them anyway. And maybe even, we don't want to admit it, but we can be tempted to say, you know, I'm kind of a better person than that person because I'm not dealing with that. But Jesus is not interested in piling on or having a justification to stay away from this blind man. He doesn't even say, God caused this so that God could show off. Or he doesn't say, yeah, being blind before meant that there was something bad about the man, but I healed him. So now you know that God likes him and you can treat him differently. Instead, Jesus' words give this sense of when those things that you want to make assumptions and judgments about a person happen, that's actually the place that God most shows up. That's where God will stay faithfully and work to bring whatever transformation and healing and wholeness that needs to happen. And that will be the light of salvation life for this person and for everyone around them, whether you're being judged or you're the person who's doing the judging. See, the Greek word for displayed here carries this meaning like revealed or brought to light. And it implies an ongoing process. It says God's going to come and he's going to show not only for this person, but for everyone that could see something transformational. And it may take this time. It may take a whole long debate and inquest. There might be seeds of something that start to happen, but God's going to stay there all the way through for everyone. There's healing for those assumptions and judgments about everything else that must be wrong about someone. And there's healing for our ability to say, I am willing to admit that I know less than God. I'm willing to admit that I'm not in control of God. I'm willing to admit that it's not my job to take on the role of judgment from God. And instead, God gives healing because he says, you can accept the joy of participating with me in the process of transformation for others and for yourselves, both in the miraculous and in the everyday. And we'll do it as learners, as disciples, over time, over and over again. That's also what God is calling for in the Job passage, for this release of the judgment and assuming, for reconciliation to happen in the community, and for supportive companionship to be the basis of how people always respond to struggle, to pain, to uncertainty and difference that others are experiencing. God essentially says, this is what you should have been doing, Eliphaz and everyone else, the whole time. And it's after and through those men do the sacrifice and seek Job's forgiveness and prayer that full thriving comes for Job and all of those around him. I believe that we're invited into the same transformation and experience of salvation life in answer to that same pain and isolation and depersonalization that we might experience in our own value judgments and assumptions that get attached to parts of our lives or to parts of lives of our loved ones. And also that we can be healed from those temptations that we might feel to make our own judgments. Like the Pharisees, when we encounter struggle, pain, uncertainty, or difference, we can be prone to swooping in and saying, you know, I've got this all figured out. I can speak for God. This is just because of all of the horrible things about that person. And I know that I'm better than that, so I don't have to worry about it. Or we'll just cast this person out, we'll stay away, and then we'll be safe. We hope their explanations will take care of everything, rather than hoping that God will come in and lovingly get right in the middle of things and bring the transformation that is needed for others and for us. Some of you have experienced times when we'll be talking and I'll be walking around, maybe after a meeting or something, like carrying a bunch of stuff. I'm like, oh, this needs to go here, this needs to go here, this needs to go here. And then suddenly I'll stop as we're talking and I'll say, oh, shoot, I need my tablet. I need this pen. I need this piece of paper to remind me of something. But I don't know where it is. And then I'll just sort of keep running my mouth and talking and like, I really need it. It's important. What's going on? It's going to take me forever to figure this out. And often someone has been like, Rob, I saw you put that down like two rooms ago in our little walk here. Like, it's okay. And that's kind of like what's happening with the Pharisees. If I can stop running my mouth and just focusing on something else and open my eyes to what is really needed, like someone is willing to do for me in that case, then the healing and the solution comes. But I have to be able to let go of some of that impulse that I have naturally to go off on my own. Now, on the other hand, some of you may know the experience that I have in my house a lot, where you're watching a movie with someone, and something happens that they don't quite understand, and they're like, who's that person? What's going on? Why are they doing that? And Wendy does that in our house. And so I've gotten used to the thing of saying, you know, Wendy, it's okay. The movie is actually trying to make us feel like we don't know what's going on yet. But let's wait and see. It'll tell us how everything's going to pan out. It'll start to make sense. Part of the experience is to, like, not know yet, but then to learn. And that'll be more interesting and exciting. And that experience, if we're willing to trust that process, is like how Jesus invites us into something better than what the Pharisees were doing. It's like being invited in that process that he gave to the blind man, to the man's family, and that really the disciples and the witnesses and the Pharisees themselves had an opportunity to if they were open to it. God invites Job and his friends to the same process. Stop. Enter into the transformation and salvation. It might take a minute. You might not know exactly what's going on right now. You might want to assume these things instead, but let yourself be a learner. Go through this together with me, and I will open your eyes in physical and metaphorical ways. Because then, even when that pain and struggle and uncertainty and difference shows up, we will be able to let go of blindness that comes from our own assumptions, that basically act like blinders on our eyes. We can be learners, we can be companions for each other, and then experience beauty and power of God by going through that experience. And that is salvation life. So whatever those things were that you maybe brought to mind earlier today for how you've had a part of your own experience judged, for how a loved one has had assumptions about them that has impacted them. And maybe even for those things that we all feel tempted about to make judgments and assumptions about others instead. Salvation life is meant to come for that. And we can be ready to be learning companions for each other, where people might be willing to share those with each other, because that brings a lot of pain and insecurity and struggle for us to feel like those things are being projected on us. And when we can give support and life and see somebody the way God sees them instead, that brings so much healing and encouragement, and that can be a gift we have for each other if we're open to letting God lead us that way. So let's see how we can seek God's transformation and healing and let go of some of those assumptions and judgments we might have. It's one way that we can offer ourselves and our lives as we move into the time of offering now. I look forward to doing that with you.